A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with our friend Lee Williams from the Second Amendment Foundation Investigative Journalism Project about the case of Patrick Tate Adamiak. Lee, of course, has been on this program a couple of times before talking about the Adamiak case. Patrick Adamiak, active duty in the Navy, was arrested and charged with possessing all kinds of restricted items without the proper paperwork, was sentenced to 20 years behind bars. And as Lee has detailed extensively, not one item that Patrick Adamiak was charged with possessing actually was illegal for him to possess. And the more reporting that Lee has done on this case, the more he has dug into this case, I got to tell you, I mean, the more abuses he has uncovered. In his latest story, details a pretty small comment by the judge who sentenced Adamiak. But while the comment is short in length, it should have had a huge impact on the disposition of this case. Frank, I think it should have had an impact on his guilt or innocence, but at the very least, it should have had an impact on the time that he was sentenced to serve. So I wanted to have Lee back on the program to talk about this. We are not going to let this case drop. We are not going to let Patrick Tate Adamiak be forgotten. And in fact, after talking with Lee, I am more encouraged than ever to actually do something to bring this case to the attention of authorities in Washington D.C. who have the power to release him from prison, to clear his name, and to allow him to once again serve this nation that he loves. Anyway, take a look and a listen to our conversation with Lee Williams. Lee, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, I know that my colleague Tom Knighton wrote about your latest piece for Bearing Arms yesterday, but I wanted to have you on the show to talk about this as well. I cannot thank you enough for paying so much time and attention to the case of Patrick Tate Adamiak. This is, I mean, it's an outrage that he was convicted. It's an outrage that he was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Frankly, I think it is an outrage that he is still behind bars. And the more we learn about this case, the more angry I get, quite frankly, because, you know, you've covered the ATF railroading Mr. Adamiak, taking these items that he had lawfully possessed, turning them into prohibited items, and then charging him with violating federal law. But your latest piece indicates that the judge overseeing this case knew that Patrick Adamiak was not in possession of a working RPG, right? That was the item that landed behind bars for the most significant period of time.
Yeah, he had two RPGs. Both of them were dummies. One was marked inert. The other one was marked training aid dummy.
Okay. And yet the ATF said, oh, these are functional rocket propelled grenade launchers, right?
Yeah, they took a ballistic kit, which fires a 7.62 by 39 millimeter round out of an RPG and put it in one of his and got it to fire around. Well, first of all, that kit will fire the round on its own, regardless of whether it's in an RPG. They also had to add multiple parts to his RPGs because they were just toys. You know, I mean, basically, that's the best way to describe them. They were toys. They had no internal parts or not many to speak of. It's incredible what they did to him.
So what did the judge say that caught your eye, Lee?
Oh, God. I mean, first of all, her name is Judge Arinda Wright Allen. She's an Obama appointee to the court.
Okay.
After he was sentenced, after the trial, he got 20 years. She had to write a statement of reason, which is known as an SOR. The document includes her reasoning behind Adamiak's two-decade sentence. And she wrote, and I quote, "Mitigating factor, performed well on bond, and this is the most important part, did not possess all parts of destructive devices." Okay, for Cam, for those fluent in federal law, the judge's comments when she said did not possess all parts of the destructive devices. I mean, it's unbelievable. It damns the prosecution, ATF, and her. Because federal law is very clear. The defendant has to possess all of the RPG parts, and I'm quoting federal law here, from which a destructive device may be readily assembled. Doesn't have to have them all together, but if you're going to charge somebody with possession of a destructive device, they have to have all the parts. And he had very few of them. I mean, this is just crazy. And the best way to describe it is she didn't know the federal gun law, she being the judge. Prosecutors didn't know the federal gun law. So they bring in this cat, this ATF chump, ATF enforcement officer Jeffrey Bodell. I mean, this is the kid. This is the first time he's ever testified. And he turns a toy Sten into a machine gun. I mean, this guy went over and above what should have happened. He was calling the toy Sten a machine gun. Cam, he had some very nice pistols that fire from an open bolt. Very rare, very expensive, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a pop right now. They fire semi-automatically from an open bolt. They're like MAC-10 style handguns. And this cat said that they were machine guns. And nobody countered it because his attorneys didn't know it was illegal either, what this guy was saying. So anyway, in my story, I said, okay, you want to make these fake RPGs illegal? I think I have like 12 links to RPGs that you can buy right now online with no data. I mean, they don't need an FFL. They don't need anything. They'll just ship you the thing. It's crazy that everything that he was charged with is completely legal to own. It makes me angry, like you can't imagine.
Absolutely. So I got to ask, I mean, you talk about Adamiak's attorneys not knowing enough to give him an adequate defense. I mean, it sounds like. Is he still working with that same legal team? I've got to ask.
No, he's not. He's okay. Got a new appellate attorney. I mean, his former trial lawyers actually said, they told him that they were happy he was charged with the fake RPGs because it was such a ridiculous claim that, you know, it damaged and hurt their case, except when he got convicted of it. He would be out right now, most likely, or getting ready to be released from prison, were it not for these RPG charges. I mean, think about that. He's got 17, 18 more years to go.
So 20 years since. So that brings me to my next question. So the appeals process is still ongoing, right?
Right. He's got a hearing coming up in December.
Okay. Man, December. God bless.
I'm sorry. September.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit better. But yeah. The wheels of justice, they grind slowly, as you well know. Do you know, is Mr. Adamiak, his family or his attorneys, are they in contact with the Trump administration, the Justice Department at all, seeking a pardon from President Trump? I mean, we've seen, I got to be honest with you, Lee, I've seen a couple of pardons from the president that I thought were questionable. And I look at, you know, Patrick Adamiak, and I think to myself, why is this guy still sitting behind bars when he should be a free man? Justice, in order for justice to be done, he should be a freed man and absolved of all of these charges.
Well, you're not alone. I put this story on Twitter yesterday, and there have been more than 100,000 views. That's what you get when you write about Patrick, because people read it and they're just stunned that this guy is still in prison. And Cam, brother, I've been through every single thing that he was charged with in his case. Every single item. There's not one that's illegal. I mean, they made this whole thing up because after they hit his house, they went through everything. They couldn't find anything illegal. And there were like 12 agencies there, you know? It's aggravating, and I'm losing sleep. I mean, this cat needs to be released from prison. He needs a pardon because, you know, yeah, the appellate process is great and they can get an appeal going and that's cool. But brother, that could take a year or two.
Absolutely. Yeah. So do you know, has an official request for a pardon been made at this point?
I know Cam, he sent a lot of letters. We've talked to some folks, we being Second Amendment Foundation. I've talked to some folks. Look at, like you said earlier, look at who Trump has pardoned. Okay. This cat did nothing wrong. If he gets released soon, he could reenlist back in the Navy. I mean, he's got 10 years in the Navy. I'm sure the Navy would take him in a heartbeat. He was going to be a SEAL officer before all this hit. I know.
I mean, it is just.
I mean, the filter I'm getting into naval special operations or special forces is so tight, especially for an enlisted kid. Now, they'll have a couple more that they'll give to the guys who graduate from the academy, Naval Academy.
Right.
And then they make them available. But for this kid as an E6 to be able to go to SEAL school as an officer, I mean, he's got to walk on, had a walk on water to a one file.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, as you say, this is one of those cases that keeps you up at night, you know, and I know you, Lee. I mean, I this is not just a matter of reflexively defending somebody who's charged with a gun crime because we don't like these gun laws. Right.
Right.
You did your research. I mean, there are a lot of folks who, you know, will come to reporters like you or I, they'll ask for help. And then you dig into their case and you're thinking, well, I mean, there's some, you know, there's some wrongdoing here. Right?
Right.
So I know you've done your due diligence. As you said, you've looked through every item that he was charged with possessing and not one of them. Right. This isn't even a case of like, well, you know, 80% of the charges against him were bogus. But maybe, you know, a couple of these charges, right. You're saying 100% of these charges were bogus.
Nothing he had was illegal. Nothing he had was done wrong. Everything he had was legal. I mean, he's got this website that's been running forever. He's selling gun parts, not guns.
Right.
Gun parts, legal gun parts. He had his own collection at home. Looks like it was a beautiful collection, brother. And that was all confiscated. I mean, they hurt this man for no damn reason. And now they should pay.
So what can we do to help? I mean, as you say, when you post something about this on social media, there are a lot of eyeballs, right? There are folks who are paying attention to this, who I know want to help him out. What can we do to help Patrick Tate Adamiak?
Email everybody involved. Email, starting with President Trump on down, and request a pardon. Request a pardon. That's the only thing that can help this kid right now. I mean, it's sad, but, you know, I talk to him 2-3 times a week, and he's, you know, I'm living here in Sarasota, Florida, God's country. He's living in a cell with 19 other dudes on bunk beds when he hangs up the phone. And it's weird. In his federal prison in New Jersey, he is known as the only innocent guy. I mean, the other inmates know right away that he's innocent. They don't even debate that. So he's doing okay, but he's still living in a big barred room
with
19 other guys.
Say
a prayer.
I tell you what, we need to get an actual, like, you know, campaign going here.
I'm all with you,
putting something together here so that we can start to apply some pressure to the Trump administration to do the right thing. I got to think that, you know, if President Trump or Ed Martin, who's kind of overseeing the pardons for the DOJ, if they become aware of this case and the injustice that is done, I would think this would be an easy call for them to make.
It would, if you look at it for 5 minutes, especially if you talk to Tate, you're done. You know, your mind should be made up.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Lee, we're going to keep talking about this. We're going to keep working on this. I'll reach out to you offline and we can see what we can do to actually kind of get some sort of coordinated grassroots campaign where folks can channel their energies into the appropriate, places so that we do get the word out, and the people who need to know about this case are aware of this case, are aware of the injustice that's being done. But again, I cannot thank you enough for continuing to shine a light on this injustice, because.
Well, thank you for having me on today.
What you're doing is so important. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Being able to get the word out, brother.
You bet, man. And if folks want to check out your writing, where can they find you?
They can go to saf.org. They can go to thegunwriter.substack.com. You go to armedamericannews.org or just look on Twitter. Everything I do, I put it on Twitter too.
Awesome. All right, Lee, thank you again for your time today, sir. I know we'll be talking again very soon.
Definitely. Thank you, Kim.
I thank once again to Lee for joining us on the program and as well for his continued coverage of the Adamiak case. I know we'll be talking with Lee again very soon. And yeah, stay tuned in the coming days here, because I really do think it is time that the Second Amendment community comes together in support of Mr. Adamiak and encourages the Trump administration to issue him a full and unconditional pardon. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Ohio. Sweetheart plea deal previously given to suspect accused of shooting Mifflin Township police. The shooting took place last week. Two Mifflin Township officers were shot. The suspect in this case, a guy by the name of Daviante Dixon. And as a Channel 6 in Columbus, Ohio reports, Dixon was previously arrested 2 years ago, charged with, among other things, possessing a firearm that had been illegally converted into a machine gun through the use of a Glock switch. Now, as Channel 6 in Columbus notes, possession of the Glock switch itself initially carried extra prison time, in fact, a mandatory prison sentence of 6 years under Ohio law. If he had been charged federally, and prosecutors had that opportunity, right? They could have said, all right, Mr. Dixon, you've been caught with a legal machine gun. We're going to kick your case up to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and you're going to do 10 years if you're convicted. They apparently did not do that. And in fact, they didn't take their own case to trial. They offered Dixon a plea deal that resulted in nothing more than probation. Channel 6 obtained footage of the 2023 arrest by Columbus police officers. They say officers can be heard shouting, "Show me both hands now." When one of them discovered the switch on the pistol, one officer said, "That's a felony. That's prison time right there." You would think, we're told possession of these Glock switches is incredibly serious, right? And yet, that's not what happened. Despite the serious nature of the charges, Channel 6 in Columbus reports a judge sentenced Dixon to probation last year. Following a plea deal agreed upon by both prosecuting and defense attorneys, the deal removed all mandatory prison time and recommended just 3 years of probation. Channel 6 says that law enforcement criticized the plea deal as a sweetheart arrangement that jeopardized public and officer safety. Rob Barnhart, an associate law professor at Capital University Law School, explained that such deals are common. Although he acknowledged that the prosecutor's office choices are likely under review, he said when people violate probation, usually it's not like this. They get caught with drugs or they stop showing up to their probation officer. Now he is charged with felonious assault and attempted murder of the two Mifflin Township police officers. That violation allows a judge to impose a prison sentence of 16 years in the 2023 court case. But again, the question is, why wasn't a prison sentence imposed to begin with? And, you know, the law professor there at Capital University says, well, you know, I mean, these plea deals are common. Plea deals in general are not just common. I mean, they are the de facto way that cases are resolved, right? Something like 97% of felony cases in this country end up resolved in a plea deal. Very few cases go to trial. I have a problem with that. But, you know, again, hiring more prosecutors, hiring more public defenders, quite frankly, hiring more judges, building more courtrooms and more courthouses, all of those things cost money. And oftentimes lawmakers are loath to spend that money. I guess we can't all have deficit spending. So there's a part of me that's accepted, okay, plea deals are a necessary part of the criminal justice system. I don't like it. I'd love for that to change. But based on the system as it stands today, fine, we're going to have plea deals. And that may be how a majority of cases get resolved. That may be how the vast majority of cases get resolved. But that doesn't mean that these deals automatically have to be so slanted in favor of the defendant that justice is not done. I mean, this is sort of the mirror opposite of what happened to Patrick Tate Adomiak, right? Sentenced to 20 years in prison for items that were legal for him to possess. Here's a guy who could have been sentenced to 6 years in the Ohio State Penitentiary, 10 years in a federal prison for possessing an item that he was not allowed to possess, and instead he gets a plea deal. He walks away with nothing more than a few years probation. That is, to me, if not as much of a problem as what happened to Patrick Tate Adomiak, it is right there. Just again, on the opposite side of the spectrum. Now, today's armed citizen story from Chicago, Illinois, where a would-be robber was shot and killed by a concealed carry holder on the city's west side. happened Tuesday night, about 10:45 in the evening, according to Chicago police. 36-year-old man was getting something from his vehicle when police say another man approached him. The suspect pulled out a gun, tried to rob the victim, but the 36-year-old man had a concealed carry license, also had his firearm on his person, drew his own pistol, shot at the suspect. The 18-year-old shot multiple times, initially taken to a Stroger Hospital in critical condition. The suspect later died at the hospital. No other injuries were reported. Again, at this point, this would be a clear case of self-defense there in the Windy City. We will keep our eyes open for any more details. But, you know, a little more than a decade ago, this would have been impossible in Chicago because the state of Illinois was the last in the nation to adopt a carry law. They had a blanket ban on concealed carry. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that that ban was unconstitutional. Gun control groups, in an attempt to keep this issue away from the Supreme Court, urged the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois to adopt a concealed carry law. And in fact, they urged them to adopt a shall issue concealed carry law because they didn't want to litigate may issue before the Supreme Court, and for good reason, as we saw in Bruin. So reluctantly, the state of Illinois did approve a shall issue concealed carry law. 16 hours of training. It's still a pain in the ass, for Chicago residents to get a concealed carry license because there are no ranges in the city of Chicago. So you got to go outside the city limits to get that training. But despite the barriers that the city has put in place between residents and their right to keep and bear arms, as of a couple of years ago, as I'm sure the number's gone up by now, but there were some 30,000 concealed carry holders in Cook County. I believe that was as of 2021. So, you know, again, it shows you the lengths that people will go to exercise this fundamental civil right to keep themselves and their loved ones safe, even in the face of all of these roadblocks that state and local governments put before them. And in this case, again, because this gentleman was able to protect himself, he lived. His attacker did not. If he didn't have a gun, who knows what the outcome could have been. Could very well have been the reverse situation, where the 18-year-old suspect ran off into the night after shooting, wounding, perhaps killing the victim of this attempted armed robbery. And we know that if that had been the case, chances are that 18-year-old never would have been arrested. The clearance rate for non-fatal shootings in Chicago right now is about 5%, meaning 95% of non-fatal shootings do not result in an arrest. Ponder that for a second, and then think about how many Chicago residents should be exercising their right to bear arms in self-defense. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. An 11-year-old in Clanton, Georgia, who is getting some recognition after saving his neighbor by calling 911. The 11-year-old in question, Caleb McKee, he was outside playing in his yard early last month when he heard his 88-year-old neighbor, identified only as Ms. Wright, crying out for help. She had actually accidentally become trapped under her own car. Caleb ran over, said he asked if she was okay, and she kept saying she needed the car off her legs. The vehicle had actually rolled over her legs. I guess maybe she didn't put it in park when she was getting out. The car went backwards. She fell and was trapped. There were no adults around. Caleb is a latchkey kid. Both his parents work. Caleb, I was in that same situation growing up. And Caleb McKee did exactly what he was supposed to do. He ran inside, grabbed a phone, called 911. Caleb said the dispatcher said they were sending everything. Firefighters, paramedics, police. He didn't know the exact address of his neighbor's home, but he was able to give them enough information that they got there quickly. And they were able to use a jack and some logs, apparently, to lift the car off of the elderly woman to free her from underneath the vehicle. Caleb says he was there by her side until the first responders drove away. He said it was graphic. He said it wasn't something everybody should see. But I stayed with her until everybody left, which is pretty amazing. Mike and Lee McKee, Caleb's parents, said for an 11-year-old to stay that calm, We were really proud. And they said that night, the family sat down together. They prayed for their neighbor, reflected on the day's events. Lee McKee saying, there's no doubt that God was working that day. Normally, she said, Caleb wouldn't have even been home, but everything lined up. It was a miracle. Ms. Wright suffered multiple broken bones. She has one more surgery scheduled, but she is now out of the hospital. She's able to visit her neighbors not long ago to thank Caleb in person. And Monday night, a couple nights ago, the Clanton City Council honored Caleb for his quick thinking and his courage. So again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. I said Clanton, Georgia, by the way. This was Clanton, Alabama. I apologize to the good folks of Clanton, Alabama, as well as the McKees there. Caleb McKee of Clanton, Alabama, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that has got to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for joining us on the program. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Chuck Michelle from the California Rifle and Pistol Association. In fact, I'll be talking with Chuck this afternoon since he is out on the West Coast. It's a little bit easier for us to connect in the afternoon than it is the early morning hours out there. CRPA and a coalition of Second Amendment groups getting ready to sue Santa Clara County and the city of Los Angeles over concealed carry fees, concealed carry delays, and other infringements on a right to keep and bear arms. We'll give you all of the details about that tomorrow on Cam and Company, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com today for the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT and you get 60% off your membership. We certainly do appreciate your support. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.